I want you to turn today to 2 Kings chapter 16, verse 5, where we're going to pick up the story of how bad King Ahaz of southern Judah brought the kingdom down. He seized control from his good father, Jotham, and almost immediately started doing all sorts of wicked, sinful things. Worshiping other gods and goddesses, encouraging that type of paganism. He even burned up one of his own little babies that was set aside as a sacrifice to apparently the pagan deity Molech Chemosh, the destroyer king. God then, as he warned he would, allowed judgment to fall on southern Judah. They get invaded by northern Israel and by the kingdom of Syria, headquartered out of Damascus. A whole bunch of people get killed. Over 100,000 people get killed. Then we end up with captives being taken. Thankfully for those captives, though, the ones that were taken northern Israel, a prophet of God said, no, that should not be happening. You need to turn those people back to the Judeans. And apparently there were enough people in leadership in northern Israel that had respect for this prophet, that they intervened and said, no, those prisoners of war are not going to stay here. They're not going to become our slaves. We're taking them back. We're sending them back. And so that's exactly what they did. That's the last thing we read when we were together last time, is that they took those prisoners to Jericho, from which they'd be able to be collected and brought back to Judah proper. But the invasion is not over. In 2 Kings 16:5, we are told, then Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, came up to wage war on Jerusalem, and they besieged Ahaz, but could not conquer him. So these guys come back, and they make a move on Jerusalem. Now, as they are coming south toward the capital city, there's going to be panic in Jerusalem, and particularly with King Ahaz. We'll get to that in just a moment. I want to mention, though, something else that was happening at this time. Verse 6, at that time, Rezin, the king of Syria, recovered Eilat for Syria and drove the men of Judah from Eilat, and the Edomites came to Eilat, where they dwell to this day. So Eilat is the port, also known as Ezion Geber, on the north end of the Gulf of Aqaba, an arm of the Red Sea. It's the port out of which King Solomon used to run trade ships. And King Jehoshaphat was trying to do the same thing during his reign. The Judeans under good King Uzziah seem to have been in control of this port city and may have been running trade ships out of it again. Jotham may have also been running trade ships out of it. But now, all of a sudden, with Ahaz in charge, the Syrians make a move on this port and take it over. And they partner, apparently, with the Edomites, who are on the outs with the Judeans as well. And they come in and occupy this port city. And that apparently whichever prophet writer is doing it says, and that it's still in the control of the Edomites in the at this time that I'm writing. So Judah is getting hit from the north and way down on the south. Please turn to Isaiah again, the prophet who was commissioned in the year that King Uzziah died. And here we are about 4 years later. And he is given an assignment by God in relationship to bad King Ahaz. Chapter number 7 of Isaiah, verse number 1. In the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, son of Uzziah, king of Judah, Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, the king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to wage war against it, but could not yet mount an attack against it. So there we have same information we just had over in 2 Kings. So they're on their way to put Jerusalem under siege. Verse 2. When the house of David was told, Syria is in league with Ephraim. Now, Ephraim is a stand-in for northern Israel because the capital city of Samaria is actually in the tribal region of Ephraim. So Ephraim's tribal region is at the core of northern Israel, and that's why it kind of becomes a synonym for northern Israel. So basically, the country of Syria is now in alliance with the country of northern Israel. And so when Ahaz finds out that that's the case, that he's being invaded, and he may not get the reports until later that he's got people dead and he's got his port cities being taken over, things like that. There's a lot of stuff happening at the same time here. A lot of coincidence. So he panics, though. It says, the heart of Ahaz and the heart of his people shook as the trees of the forest shake before the wind. So there is great anxiety everywhere in southern Judah. The 20-year-old newly usurped king, he is the usurper king, is thinking, I got problems. What am I going to do? And so God sends Isaiah to him with an offer to trust God. That's what you should do. Verse 3. He who is said to Isaiah, go out to meet Ahaz, you and Shir-Yashub, your son. Now, Shir-Yashub's name literally means a remnant shall return. So Isaiah has been told to give specific names to his kids, very much like we saw already in the book of Hosea. Symbolic naming of prophets' kids. Now, how old is his son? Well, my guess is not very old. And so he's supposed to take his young boy that has a symbolic name and go out to the end of the conduit of the upper pool on the highway to the washer's field. Now, everybody has a hard time pinning exactly down where this is. I'm going to give you my best guess. There is a valley that in later times will be called the Tyropian Valley or the Cheesemaker's Valley, and it goes all along the west side of the most ancient part of Jerusalem, the city of David, and then continues north along what we now call the Temple Mount until finally it gets up and has a starting point as a valley somewhere up near to where I believe the authentic Golgotha is. So I believe this valley may be the highway that's going up to the washer's field, and that it has water conduits that are part of this valley, because water moves downhill, and so it's just convenient to have watering containment systems along a descending valley. That's my guess. All of this would have been inside the walls of Solomon's Jerusalem, inside Solomon's walls for Jerusalem. So nobody's outside the protection of the city walls when this happens. Verse number 4. Say to him, that is, go and meet Ahaz, and then say to him this: be careful, be quiet, don't fear, don't let your heart be faint because of these two smoldering stumps of firebrands at the fierce anger of Rezin of Syria and of the son of Remaliah. Because Syria with Ephraim and the son of Remaliah has devised evil against you, saying, let's go up against Judah and terrify it, and let's conquer it for ourselves and set up the son of Tabeel as king in the midst of it. Now, this is a little bit more detail for us. The word has gotten to King Ahaz that northern Israel and the kingdom of Syria are coming against him, not to make him tributary to them, but to basically kill him and put somebody else on the throne of southern Judah as a puppet for them. And so he's heard that story, and he is terrified at it. Again, remember, he's only 20, so he doesn't have an awful lot of life experience. But God is speaking through the prophet, saying, you don't need to worry about these two firebrands, these two smoldering fire sources, because this is what I want to tell you. Verse 7, thus says he who is God, it shall not stand and it shall not come to pass. So they are not going to be successful. They are not going to be able to remove you as king. They are not going to put in somebody else. They are not going to take the city of Jerusalem. Verse 8, for the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. So the capital city of Syria is Damascus, and the king of Damascus is Rezin, this troublemaker. And then comes a very specific prophecy. Within 65 years, so within a lifespan, Ephraim will be shattered from being a people. So northern Israel has less than a lifespan left. That's the prophecy. They have less than that left. As I said, this is 734 BC. They will go into captivity within 11 years. But there's kind of a settling time afterward that's included here for where northern Israel is totally gone. Verse number 9, the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is the son of Remaliah, that is Pekah. If you are not firm in faith, you will not be firm at all. So the message of God through Isaiah to King Ahaz is, you need to trust God. Quit panicking. Quit thinking that everything's going to go bad here, because it doesn't have to, and it won't, in fact, because God will provide. Verse number 10. We come to a very famous passage, particularly around Christmas time. And I want you to understand that this is one of those places where we have double meanings. We have a prophecy that is intended for the near moment in history. That is a prophecy intended for Ahaz. But we also have a prophecy intended for much later, for the time of the Messiah, the coming of Jesus. And so we're very familiar with that second one, with how Mary is impregnated by the Holy Spirit, and she becomes the virgin who gives birth to the Son of God. So we know that fulfillment to this passage. But I want to teach you the other, closer in history, prophetic fulfillment. Verse number 10, again, he who is spoke to Ahaz. So Isaiah is the prophet who's delivering this. Ask a sign of he who is your God. Let it be deep as Sheol or as high as heaven. So young prophet Isaiah says to young but bad King Ahaz, God is making you an offer. Set a sign that he can perform and prove to you that you can trust him. Because remember, Ahaz is panicking. So he is offered to set his own sign. But he doesn't want it, because the reality is Ahaz doesn't want a relationship with he who is. Why? Because he who is a jealous God. He who is an exclusive God. He is the only God, and he expects you to treat him as such. And Ahaz doesn't want that. He wants to worship all the other gods and goddesses. So Ahaz said back, I will not ask. I will not put he who is to the test. Now that is really a twist. He tries to use some sort of religious principle that, no, I don't want to put he who is into some sort of test cycle. I don't want to tell him, hey, you have to do this for me to believe. Not going to do it. But that's really not the reason for his rejection. The reason for his rejection is the fact that he already wants to worship other gods and goddesses. Never forget that fact. God already knows that. Remember, God lives outside of time. He knows the end from the beginning. He knows exactly the free will choices that everybody will make. But he still gives those free will choices because there needs to be a record. There needs to be a lesson to be passed on. Remember in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul said that all the things that happened in the past were written down for our benefit so that we could learn from the mistakes and the good choices of the past. So here's one of those places where God lets it play out so that we can learn from it. Verse 13. So Isaiah said, hear then, O house of David, is it too little for you to weary men that you weary my God also? Now, I actually think that the wearying of men is a reference to the fact that he has usurped his father's position and that he has made some very bad choices that have brought about this invasion from the north. So, isn't it bad enough that you've caused all the trouble in just your kingness? Now you're going to cause trouble with God by refusing to take him up on asking for a sign to prove his trustworthiness? And then our famous passage, verse 14. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. So you won't choose a sign, God will give you one. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Now, Emmanuel means God is with us, which typically people would have understood as God is on our side. We know in the second application of this passage, the one that is more significant to us, that it literally meant God Himself is among us, because God, Jesus, divested Himself of all His divine prerogatives and took on the form of a servant, the form of a human, and became our Savior. And it all started, that is, the human part of the story started there at Nazareth and then at Bethlehem. And so that's typically where we pick up this verse. But remember that this is also supposed to be a sign for this time period, for Ahaz. So the virgin that's going to conceive is going to be a virgin of this time period, an unmarried woman that's going to get pregnant. In a moment, we'll find out that it's going to be the second wife of the prophet Isaiah. Apparently, his first wife must have passed away. So, behold, the virgin shall conceive, bear a son, and shall call his name God is with us. He shall eat curds and honey, so, you know, soft cheese and honey, when he knows how to refuse the evil and choose the good. So we're talking about as he gets old enough to start eating his own food, you know, on his own, and he's able to think and start understanding a little bit of the basics of what right and wrong are and exercise that free will. So we're talking about a kid, an elementary age kid. He shall eat curds and honey when he knows how to refuse the evil and choose the good. For before the boy knows how to refuse the evil and choose the good, the land whose two kings you dread will be deserted. So before the boy that's about to be conceived is old enough to be like in elementary, early elementary school, and start thinking about what's right and wrong and choosing the right, the two guys you're panicking over are going to be gone. And that's absolutely true. They'll be gone in less time than that. Verse 17, he who is will bring upon you and upon your people and upon your father's house such days as have not been or not come since the day that Ephraim departed from Judah, the king of Assyria. So verse 17, very important here at this juncture in our study. God says, first, the two guys you're really panicked about right now are not going to be a problem. They'll be gone in a handful of years, maybe a double handful. The real thing is going to be, I'm going to allow the king of Assyria, Tiglath-Pileser, to come into Judah. And that is going to be a problem for you guys. Verse 18, in that day, he who is will whistle for the fly that is at the end of the streams of Egypt and for the bee that is in the land of Assyria. Now, this is interesting metaphors used here. We're talking about insects that are irritating and troublesome, but they represent armies that are going to come in and do trouble. We're going to start seeing the Egyptians come back into our stories, and we're going to see the Assyrians definitely come into our stories, and they're coming from opposite directions. Israel is situated on a land bridge between Mesopotamia and the Nile Delta. And so Israel is going to be fought over by the Assyrians and the Egyptians. And they will all come and settle in the steep ravines and in the clefts of the rocks and on all the thorn bushes and on all the pastures. Basically, they're going to invade you guys. In that day, The Lord will shave with a razor that is hired beyond the river with the king of Assyria, the head and the hair of the feet, and it will sweep away the beard also. The king of Assyria is described as being like God's razor. And a razor was often applied to people taken as POWs. It may have been an anti-lice action, or it may have been just a way to shame the people. But they would take the POWs and cut off all their hair. And so the king of Assyria is God's razor that's going to take the people into exile. Verse 21, in that day, a man will keep alive a young cow and two sheep, and because of the abundance of milk that they give, he will eat curds, for everyone who's left in the land will eat curds and honey. So again, we get back to that prophecy about the young boy, that his main food, curds and honey. Well, here is Isaiah passing on God's message. Hey, when the Assyrians sweep through northern Israel, through Syria and northern Israel, there's going to be a whole bunch of people down here in Judah that are going to start making sure that they've got home animals that they can milk and make curds for themselves. And also they'll know all the places to get up the wild honey. And so that's going to be a major food source during this very scary moment. In that day, every place where there used to be 1,000 vines worth of 1,000 shekels of silver will become briars and thorns. And so now we start seeing the description that land is going to lose its productivity because God's judgment is coming not simply in the form of foreign armies, but he's also going to send the problems of drought and agricultural thorns and thistles. Mark your place. We'll get back here next time we get into God's Word.